This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We have flood warnings in parts of the Chicago area today. Breezy and mild. Temperature of in the 50s right now. We've got 54 degrees at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Well, Cisco and Chris, we are in the green at the moment. We've gone back and forth between gains and losses as President Trump says China's trade delegation is coming to the U.S. to make a deal. Wall Street wasn't doing a whole lot with that until his press secretary echoed the thought and told reporters that the U.S. got an indication China does want a trade deal, and that got investors' attention. The Dow is higher by 99 points, or a third of a percent, to 26,066. NASDAQ advancing 24 points, and the S&P up 9. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index sliding 0.2%, mostly because of locally based Potbelly. Its shares are tumbling to a record low, down more than 18% after the sandwich chain's comparable sales missed estimates. Potbelly is also cutting its forecast for the year. Analysts say bad weather, advertising delays, and even the federal government shutdown weighed on its results. Crude oil futures higher on fewer stockpiles here in the U.S. Crude trading to $61.95 a barrel. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
There are protests in the U.S. and the U.K. today against claiming low wages and working conditions. That's going on overseas. And there are pressures on Illinois to legalize sports betting and bring hundreds of jobs to Chicago at the same time.
Personal Finance Wednesday, how to get your high school grad ready to handle money if they're headed off to college. All of that and loads more coming up on the Noon Business Hour.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A fantasy sports company says it will bring hundreds of jobs to Chicago if sports betting becomes legal here in Illinois. We're going to talk about the odds of that happening in our next segment. Right now, Lyft and Uber drivers in Chicago and other cities are planning a strike today as they call for higher wages. We're joined by Ann Vandermay, technology and startup reporter for Bloomberg in San Francisco. Thanks for joining us today. And how successful do you think this could be?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. Drivers around the world are protesting and striking, but people in New York, L.A., London are saying that they're not seeing huge delays when they try to use the app. So this may be more symbolic more than anything.
So the point is to talk to people who would be using Uber and tell them why I'm protesting and look at what's going to be happening here.
Well, yeah. So drivers were hoping to cause some disruptions in commute times to really get noticed by just turning off the app altogether. But what seems to be happening is that not everyone knows about the strike. Some drivers are still picking up passengers. So it's unclear if the strike itself is going to have a huge impact, but the protests are getting noticed and kind of making people ask more questions.
And of course, strategic and symbolic that they would choose to do this this week as Uber's ready to go public.
Yes, exactly. Uber is, you know, slated to end up with a market valuation of around $84 billion. And that number has kind of rankled some drivers who feel that investors are getting rich off this company while they are not really able to make a living wage.
Now, does it, in effect, I guess, maybe make it tougher to do something like this, to stage a strike, when everyone at Uber and Lyft, they're all independent contractors, they all come and go as they want. It's sort of tough to corral everyone together.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's why you're seeing, you know, a lot of these groups are trying to reach out to people on Facebook, but it's hard to rally gig economy workers. It's not like, say, you're a Google, you know, you have a central place where all employees are, or even an auto factory. It's easier to kind of corral workers and get your message out.
So how many of these companies exist right now? We know that there are three very large ones, but are there local additions as well?
Well, I think you're seeing most of the attention focused on Uber because of the IPO, but Lyft is also getting, a lot of drivers are boycotting Lyft today as well.
So if they don't have some sort of a major following here where they get a bunch of people to shut the app off, in a way, does that backfire then? Because the folks at Uber and Lyft can see that they're really not a united workforce.
I don't know. One thing that you're seeing in cities across the world is that the protests are pretty visible. Even if people are still using the app, even if some drivers are still using the app, at Uber offices in a lot of major cities, people are picketing. So I think drivers are hoping that is what is going to get attention and maybe make an impact.
So the wages, how much they make, obviously that's a big deal. Are there other things that the rideshare drivers are upset about?
Yeah, wages are a really big one. Another one is job stability. A lot of folks seem to be upset about what they're calling unfair deactivations. It's kind of when you're booted off the platform. But, you know, as a contract workforce, there's some job protection, some job stability guarantees that you just don't have. So that's a pretty big one. And then Uber's cut, the percentage that Uber takes from each fare is also been kind of a rallying point.
Have we heard anything about in the major cities the turnout and also what kind of, with the buses and the Ubers and the other cabs and cars, that could make a mess?
You know, it seems like traffic really hasn't been snarled in a lot of these cities. In New York, where drivers decided to kind of log off during morning rush hour, people were reporting traffic kind of as normal. So it's maybe hasn't had as much of an impact on traffic as you might expect.
Uber said recently that it's looking to maybe curtail some of the driver incentives that it gives to bring drivers to the platform. That, I would imagine, is another thing that the drivers wouldn't be happy about.
Yeah, Uber's IPO filing has really irritated a lot of drivers. One of the things that they said in the filing is that because they're trying to increase profitability, they're reducing driver incentives, they expect driver dissatisfaction to generally increase. And that is something that has kind of set a lot of people off.
Anne Vandermay, thanks for being with us. Anne is a technology and startup reporter at Bloomberg, based in San Francisco. Coming up, how legal sports betting could impact the job market here in Chicago.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Fantasy sports giant FanDuel is offering to bring hundreds of jobs to Chicago if Illinois lawmakers legalize sports betting. Let's get the latest now from Danny Ecker, reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Danny, is this FanDuel trying to maybe push legalized sports betting over the finish line here?
Yeah, this is a little extra carrot to try to entice lawmakers down in Springfield to climb aboard the sports betting bandwagon. Basically, they've said that they need to establish a Midwest outpost, and it'll be in Chicago with as many as 300 jobs. But, of course, that's contingent upon Illinois legalizing sports betting like other states have. We're up to 8 states now that have full-scale legal sports betting. So, and there appear to be some more coming soon. So this was meant to just kind of encourage a new bit of encouragement for legislators to say, hey, by the way, there's tax money and revenue for the state from this, but there's also jobs.
Now, why would FanDuel have to come here? What's in it for them? Since this is so virtual, they could literally seemingly do it from anywhere.
Right, and they do. They have a number of offices on both coasts, but they also have customer service reps that would be here. They have a lot of product technology people, and then also in each of their offices in different time zones, they've got people that monitor and establish betting lines, things like that. So it's, they look at, obviously, another thing that's attracted them here is, Chicago's tech talent pool. That's why a lot of tech companies from the coast have opened up, set up shop and opened offices here in Chicago in the last several years. So they're following suit with those, but they're hoping to get some leverage out of it by saying, well, we'll only do this they wouldn't set up a shop in a place that doesn't have legal, that they can't operate legally. So it's one of those things that they're just trying to kind of get a little extra something out of it here.
Is this kind of climbing out of an old-fashioned point of view about what you could introduce to Illinois residents? What is going to move this forward?
Well, it's unclear right now. I mean, you know, this is something that Governor Pritzker has pushed for, you know, legalizing sports betting. He's counting on $200 million in licensing revenue from sports betting as part of his fiscal 2020 budget. Whether or not that comes to pass, we'll see here in the next few weeks. But, you know, there's a lot of questions in play. There's still plenty of opposition to it. And there's actually quite a bit of sort of infighting among gambling operators, including those like FanDuel, and then you got casino operators that have been, you know, operating and doing legal gambling for years, over who's going to get the biggest piece of the action here. So there are a lot of questions to be sorted through, and it's unclear whether this is going to be moving forward in the next few weeks. But the folks at FanDuel are, you know, down in Springfield, and you know, many proponents of sports gambling are, you know, just trying to back this as much as they can because they don't want to miss this opportunity.
All right. We'll be listening to you, Danny, as this progresses. Danny Ecker is reporter at Crane Chicago Business. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, getting high school graduates financially prepared for the future, whether it's college, trade school, or a job.
Cisco, the Dow is up 85 points, or a third of a percent. NASDAQ higher by 18, and the S&P gaining 7. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg lower by a quarter percent. Weighed down by Potbelly stock, it's sinking about 18% after its sales for the quarter didn't meet analyst estimates. Crude oil futures are gaining. They're up almost 1% to $61.94 a barrel, still lower for the week and for the month, down 3%. Now let's turn to Pete Manhard at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
After being mixed earlier in the day, we have grains lower across the board. December corn down 1.25 at 382.5. Beans for November down 1.5 at 851.5. And July wheat down 3 at 436.5. Mixed early in the day, lower late in the day. And this is Pete Manhard at Bates Commodities and Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are gaining ground today. We'll see what's lifting the markets.
Personal Finance Wednesday, advice on helping high school graduates establish a firm financial base regardless of their next step in life.
The appearance of a coffee cup in an episode of the hit show Game of Thrones. It's taken on a life of its own.
The Cubs are investigating a possible racist incident that took place during the TV broadcast of last night's game.
The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee says President Trump's use of executive privilege over the Mueller report is a clear escalation of his defiance of Congress.
Wall Street, the Dow Industrials up 84, the NASDAQ up 16, and the S&P 500 up by 6.5.
A little bit of sunshine in some areas of Chicagoland, clouds and even lingering rain showers in others. We're heading to a high of 64 degrees. Right now, it's 52. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Well, the markets are up a bit this hour. We're talking with Hugh Johnson, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors in Albany. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Hugh, what are you seeing in the markets today?
Well, Chris, I'm seeing a little bit of relief. Obviously, we don't have the kinds of declines that we saw in the last couple of days. So that's welcome news. I think that what's really driving the markets, and what's driving the markets for the last really 3 days, has been concerns over the obviously tariff conditions between the U.S. and China, the worries that we're going to increase tariffs on the goods that we import from China. That's going to lead to a trade war, and that's going to have an impact not only on the economy of China, but also the economy and, most importantly, earnings in the U.S. So everybody's focused on that, and the president today did tweet again and did sort of imply or suggest that not only is the vice premier of China on his way to the U.S., but that they're likely to strike a deal now. Who knows? I don't know if he can take these tweets really that seriously or take them literally, but nevertheless, he did say that, and that did sort of serve as a catalyst to get a little bit of a rally or recovery in stock prices, but we're not out of the woods yet.
Hugh, as we've seen a lot of this trade talk sort of back and forth, it seems like it went from almost a disaster to, hey, maybe now we're going to have a deal by the end of the week. It's been just this roller coaster.
It's been a roller coaster for a very, very long time, Cisco, and you're absolutely right there. And it's had a big impact on the markets, created a lot of volatility. I would only add my own thoughts here, and these are thoughts that I've accumulated from a lot of people who I think are pretty in touch with the situation, and that although we could have an escalation of the trade tensions between the U.S. and China, and that we could have increased tariffs on imports from China, it's not likely, for a variety of technical reasons, but it's not likely to have a major impact on the U.S. economy. It's not likely to have much of an impact at all. It'll have a bigger impact on China than it will on the U.S. And so the level of volatility, the level of sort of the hysteria that's been caught up in the kind of volatility, the news that's a sort of an on-again, off-again type of thing, I don't think is really justified. And in some ways, I welcome the decline in stock prices because we're getting a little pricey, a little bit overvalued, and we're getting down to levels. They're still not attractive, but they're getting at least in that direction. So anyway, I wouldn't get caught up in this. Federal Reserve policy, interest rates, and earnings are far more important than the trade situation between the U.S. and China.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about some of those the data points and other things to watch, because it seems like the people who are bringing us this volatility are is it maybe the more emotional investors who are responding to tweets and headlines and breaking news instead of really looking at the underlying facts?
You're absolutely right, and you couldn't hit the nail on the head better. No question about it. That getting caught up in this and in the volatility and trading the markets based on the kinds of things that we're seeing coming out of either the White House, the tweets, or either coming out of any source, really, it's really not justified. And again, the thing I would emphasize is that if you ask yourself, if you do a lot of the analysis and ask yourself what's going to be the impact of increased tariffs on the economy and earnings of U.S. companies, the answer is not nearly as much as the volatility in the markets would seem to suggest.
China says today that it will take necessary countermeasures if the U.S. raises tariffs on Friday. So what's next in this plot?
Well, Chris, that's a pretty good example of the kind of stuff we get. We get announcements, statements coming out of Washington, announcements, statements, threats, counter threats coming out of China. And that's the kind of thing that investors focus on. And that's the kind of thing that creates the sort of emotional volatility. And I would say just don't focus on that. Focus on the underlying fundamentals, and the underlying fundamentals are really not that significant. I will see something by this weekend. We'll see some more news, and I'll hopefully get this straightened out and hopefully remove this issue from the headlines. And then we'll get back to what really counts, Chris. And what really counts are, the prospects for earnings in 2019 and 20. That's really important. And what's the Federal Reserve going to do about the underlying economy as it's in the process of slowing? Maybe not slowing significantly, but slowing some. What's the Federal Reserve going to do, and what does that mean for interest rates and price-earnings ratios? Those are the things that really count.
Any predictions about what the economy is going to do?
Yeah, I think the economy is in the process of slowing. I don't think it's going to slow as much as the consensus. The consensus has it slowing to something like 2.3% this year and maybe 1.9% in 2020 and 1.8% in 2021. That's a big slowdown, and obviously a slowdown in the growth of things like employment and consumer spending. No, I think we'll slow, but I don't think we're going to slow that much. And I think earnings will slow, but I don't think earnings are going to slow that much. The problem to me is not that, is not the slowdown. The problem is that we had such a big move up in the stock market between December and really currently, that we've really taken away all the upside potential. There's great upside potential in December, really attractive, widespread pessimism, just what you wanted. And unfortunately, we burned a lot of it up. And so I would like to see a little bit of a pullback to levels that make a little bit more sense. So I would say keep your powder dry. There's hopefully going to be a better buying opportunity somewhere along the line and somewhere fairly soon.
Hugh Johnson, always good insight. Thank you. Hugh is Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors, based in Albany. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, getting high school graduates prepared for their financial future.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we're examining ways to help high school graduates establish firm financial footing. We welcome Mark Horner, Wealth Advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management, based in Oak Brook. Mark, whether we're talking about kids who are headed off to college or trade school or into the workforce, either way, they have to be financially savvy.
Yeah, so any of that group, Cisco, I think it's important to get started off with good habits. And so I think, there's a common rule of thumb out there for us older people, the 50-30-20 rule, which is a budgeting rule that says 50% of our income should be earmarked for necessities, groceries, paying rent, 30% should be fun, and 20% should be allocated towards either saving for retirement or paying off debt or a combination thereof. So I think a variation of that for kids who generally don't have to pay the grocery bills or kick in for housing expenses is just the 50-50 rule, that for high schoolers or college kids that are home and working summer jobs, that parents should try and encourage them, I think, to have 50% of that money that they earn go towards savings. And my number one favorite for young people especially is to get started in a Roth IRA, and the other 50% allocated for fun and going out with their buddies. And then I think another third portion of that getting started with good financial habits is on credit. And there's a couple of different ideas there.
Yeah, tell us about that. So when it comes to credit, you don't want to ignore it, because then your children are going to find out on their own, but you don't necessarily want them to become big credit card users, to really get hooked on it.
Absolutely. So a couple of ideas are one, you could get practice with that piece of plastic in your pocket by giving your kids a debit card that's linked to a savings account. That's sort of credit training wheels, because it's hard to get yourself into trouble, because your activity with the credit card is limited by how much money you've got in the account. Another idea, though, is to put your kids on as an authorized user on either mom or dad's credit card. This is going to help them build actual credit history, and also, because you'll see the activity on your own statement, you'll be able to monitor what's going on with their spending. And really interestingly is that authorized users, there's no age minimum. So I'd share that my 12-year-old, our youngest daughter, is an authorized user on my credit card. So she's starting to build credit history as a 12-year-old. Now, if I go down the tubes, that's going to be her burden to bear as well. but when she gets out of college, she's going to have 10 years of credit history to help her buy that first car, maybe sign that first apartment rent. So getting started building credit history is very important.
Would you recommend the summer before starting college, having some kind of a job before getting into the classrooms?
Chris, on this credit card thing, as crazy as it sounds, there's no age minimum. I'd say for anybody that is a newborn baby, go ahead and put your baby on as an authorized user on your credit card to get them started on building credit history. And then as far as going on savings, just the power of time, the earlier you get started, the better. So on that first job, using that as an opportunity to teach kids the importance of saving, paying yourself first, saving, but having some money left over to go out and enjoy it and have fun with their friends.
Mark Horner, always good advice. Thanks for being with us. Mark is a wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management, based in Oak Brook. Company website, fairhavenwealth.com. Be sure to join us all next week for WBBM's Education Week. Each day, we'll have a segment on the business of getting into college. Still to come today, how a cup of coffee on a TV show caused a social media uproar.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The coffee cup that has prompted thousands of tweets has already been digitally eliminated from the Sunday's Game of Thrones episode, but the massive publicity from the gaffe continues. We welcome Tom Serafin, founder and CEO of Serafin & Associates in Chicago. Thanks for joining us today, Tom. Was this really a gaffe, and what happened?
It was a gaffe, and it was just left behind in the scene. They have continuity directors whose jobs are to make sure that the set is clean and things are immaculate so that they can go ahead and shoot the scene. Somehow this cup was left behind. The irony is that it was not a Starbucks cup. It was just a Craft Services cup that they have there in the studio, but it looks like a Starbucks cup. So that's why Starbucks is having a lot of fun with this. It's, you know, if you take a look at what CNBC is talking about, over $2 million worth of free advertising for the Game of Thrones and Starbucks. And most of these, when you get something like this in a movie where you have placements, it's usually about $22,000 on an average to place something, you know, in a movie or something, and you get less than 5.1 seconds. I think that's the average. They did it very well, and it didn't cost them a dime.
What did it do to Game of Thrones?
Well, this was the this is another great irony. I mean, Starbucks must be really cheering themselves. Close to 18 million in the audience, the largest HBO series show ever seen on any platform, across all platforms, with about 8 million plus tweets. So they captured the largest audience, and this was inside that program. So from Starbucks' point of view, they had a lot of fun with it, and they issued a statement saying, you know, we're surprised that she didn't order a dragon drink. And of course, HBO said, it was a mistake, but they said that latte appeared in the episode was a mistake. She had ordered a herbal tea. So they had a lot of fun with it. It worked for both brands. Both did very well at it. And of course, product placement is an expensive item. Starbucks gets it all free this time.
You know, another sort of coffee story, Dunkin' Donuts here. Obviously, they wish that everyone had been thinking of them when the coffee cup was there on Game of Thrones. Starbucks sort of cemented it as the coffee leader. Dunkin' Donuts, though, they're putting out these new cups. I want to ask you about that, too. You have Dunkin' that's getting rid of the foam cups. Some people are really happy, and some customers not so happy.
Well, you know, as a guy used to do Dunkin' Donuts, you know, many years ago on the way into the office all the time, they're right there on the corner. You know, it was foam, and now they've got this. They spent a lot of time doing research and getting into this double-walled paper cup that's just like styrofoam, according to them, and keeps that coffee warmer. It's a state-of-the-art cup, and you still have that reclosable lid on top. Right, they used to be a synonymous coffee. Right now, you know, if you take a look at what's going on with Twitter and everything else, Starbucks has become almost synonymous with the word coffee, much like Kleenex is with the tissue. Give me some Kleenex, you know, the variety of brands. And now all of a sudden, you know, coffee cup that looks like this is Starbucks. It's terrific brand work.
Absolutely, yeah. Tom Serafin, thanks for being with us. Founder, CEO, Serafin and Associates. An update on the markets from Bloomberg is next. WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of Wall Street. Sponsored by FinishingChicago.com at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we are hanging with some gains, although they're modest. The Dow up 76 points or 0.25%, but we are back above 26,000, and the NASDAQ adding 13 points, S&P higher by 6. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is lower by 0.33%. Office Depot is looking to cut costs by $100 million a year. The chain says it will create a leaner business by making more use of technology and automation, so that means some job cuts are coming. The company will not say how many. Investors don't seem entirely convinced that Lyft's huge loss during the latest quarter is the worst they'll ever see. That's Lyft's take on the company's more than $1 billion loss. The stock started the morning with gains, and right now it's down about 7%. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.